It's a nightmare that keeps getting scarier. The deadly Ebola virus continues to spread in West Africa. This most recent outbreak started in March, and so far, more than 660 people have died. It's affecting people in Guinea, Sierra Leone, Liberia, and perhaps soon in Nigeria. Over the weekend, the death of a Liberian man in the Nigerian city of Lagos has put Nigerians on alert. A pretty bleak picture. To give it more detail, we turn to Dr. William Fisher at the University of North Carolina. He recently returned from treating Ebola patients in Guinea.
People think that Ebola is a disease that quickly burns out and is incredibly devastating. But in fact, it has an incubation period of 21 days, and many of the symptoms that are associated with Ebola are nonspecific. Most of the patients presenting to Gekadu actually had just vomiting, diarrhea, fever. And so it's you can imagine if you can have a virus and be incubating in your body for 21 days, it's not difficult to be able to get on a plane in one place and end up in another place.
You may have heard, I'm sure you heard over the weekend, the news that two Americans treating patients in Liberia have tested positive with the virus, and also a high-profile Liberian doctor has now died of the disease. Describe for us some of the challenges that healthcare workers face when treating patients and why it is so difficult in a place like West Africa.
The true tragedy lies not necessarily in who is infected, but just that somebody is infected with a virus that by all accounts is preventable. The working conditions are difficult, and they're difficult for a number of reasons. There's an incredible emotional fatigue. For one, the mortality rate's devastating. On a good week, your mortality rate of 60% still means that 6 out of 10 people die. That's incredibly emotionally fatiguing. There's also a physical fatigue factor that some people have discussed, and it stems from the necessity to wear incredibly protective equipment. As I described previously, you're essentially – there's not a single inch of skin that's exposed. And these suits can get incredibly hot. And I actually took a thermometer in with me one day and registered 40 degrees Celsius, which is around 115, 116 degrees
wow.
Fahrenheit inside the suit. And so you lose between 3 to 5 liters of sweat every time that you go into this treatment facility. And on average, you go in 2 or 3 times a day. And in this setting, when you're trying to take care of patients and trying to place IVs and trying to adjust IVs, you're sweating profusely, and that sweat is pouring into your eyes, impairing your ability to see. Your goggles are fogging up. So there's an incredible opportunity to become infected throughout your day.
On top of all that, there have been reports that a number of villages in Guinea have become wary of foreign doctors and NGOs coming into their villages. Are you hearing those stories?
Absolutely. I think this is a major impediment to ending this outbreak. From the beginning, there was incredible mistrust. And to be honest, I can't blame the mistrust, because these treatment facilities are doing all the right things to try to help patients out. But the reality is that upwards of 9 out of 10 patients who present to these treatment facilities come home in a body bag. So I can understand the incredible mistrust that exists between the affected communities and the healthcare providers.
I know you've been speaking with some of your colleagues who are in the field right now. What kind of things are they telling you? Like, what are villagers cautious and wary of?
I've received reports of two colleagues who went out into the field to try to locate a woman who was displaying symptoms of Ebola. Within a matter of moments, they quickly became surrounded by a growing crowd of young men who started yelling things at them. And apparently one even brandished a machete, which prompted them to obviously get in the car and to leave out of fear for their own safety. Unfortunately, without the young woman who may have or may not have been infected.
When you were there, were you afraid of becoming affected?
I would love to tell you that I was stoic and had no fear at all, but the fear was almost paralyzing. I would say the most difficult time for me was the 5 days before I left Geneva for Guinea. And it was that time where I was thinking, you know, I was reflecting upon what I knew about Ebola. And unfortunately, a lot of that came from popular media, which portrays infected patients as patients who are bleeding out uncontrollably with a near uniformly fatal disease. And so that was incredibly difficult to convince my wife and my two young boys that this was the right thing to do. I think we all knew it was the right thing to do, but it was paralyzing. The fear was absolutely paralyzing.
But now the disease is still unabated and spreads all the way to Nigeria now. You were planning to go back to Guinea to continue helping with treatment. Are you weighing that decision again?
I definitely want to go back. And I want to go back because I think we can do better. I know we can do better. We can improve mortality outcomes with aggressive clinical care support. It's tough, though, to tell your family, you know, especially after recent healthcare workers have become infected themselves. It's tough. There's an inherent tension there in that it's tough to tell them, that convince them that this is the right thing for me. But I feel like it's the right thing to do.
Dr. William Fisher at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, thanks very much.
Marco, thank you so much for having me.
At PRI.org, we have an infographic that shows suspected and confirmed cases of Ebola in West Africa and how this crisis compares to other major Ebola outbreaks since 1976. Again, that's at PRI.org.